This recording is produced from Open Reel Tapes, originally recorded for Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus, in 1970. This program forms part of the Langara College Real History Project, which restores and preserves British Columbia's oral history. This project is funded in part by the British Columbia 2000 Millennium Arts and Heritage Fund, in partnership with Vancouver Public Library and Langara College. Copyright for this product is held by Langara College. It may not be reproduced in whole or in part in any form without permission from the copyright holder. The title of this recording is The Role of the MLA, Liberal Member Barry Clark. The interviewers are members of the Vancouver Community College faculty. The interviewee is Barry Clark. The audience consists of students at Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus.
We are interviewing Barry Clark, Liberal MLA. Mr. Clark, what was your educational background, please?
Graduated from high school in Kelowna, here in British Columbia, and I went to UBC after working a couple of years, and registered in theology, taking my Bachelor of Arts in History and English. And in the end of my third year, I quit both churches and did not go back to UBC.
Was there an early influence in your political thinking?
Well, when you talk about early influence, I can't tell you when I started thinking politics. I was very alert to politics growing up in school. I grew up during the war. I was opposed to the war for a whole number of reasons, mainly its effect on my community. There were very few men around. Most of the men had gone into the army. I became active in the young PCF organization, not the least reason being that the girl I was going with at that time, her parents were very active in the PCF, and that was enough of motivation to become involved myself. I dropped out of politics, and it didn't interest me for a while. And as I've already told you, I had intentions of becoming a minister in the United Church of Canada. My reasons for doing that were largely social, and in as much as those things that concerned me in society were social needs. And I became determined or convinced within the church that not only did I not believe what the church was preaching, but I didn't believe the church was going to result in any changes that I wanted to see happen. So I left the church. Now, when I became involved in politics again, was not until I had married, and in my local community, which was North Vancouver, I became involved in the activities of the local council. And it's due to a sewer program, and I became involved in promoting that program. Ended up on a ratepayers organization, the organization where I bought my house, the first house I'd owned. Eventually, I became president of that organization. Then the same group asked me to run for council one year. I was defeated. I ran again the next year and was elected. Served 2 years, sought re-election, and was successful. Served another year, and then was asked by... At all this time, I had no capital C political affiliation, although I had supported in two elections Jack Davis, who obviously was running for the Liberals. I had maintained no party membership. In 1965, I was asked by Ray Terrell, who was then leader of the Liberal Party, if I would consider accepting a nomination if it was offered to me to run for his party. And I took some 8 months to a year mulling that over and finally decided that if the nomination was offered to me, I would accept it.
How did you actually get involved in your beginnings in North Vancouver? Was there any particular reason, or there must be some sort of association or reason why you did get involved with the Suicidal Alignment Trust that you had mentioned?
Yeah, that's a fair enough question. I'm the type of guy that has always become involved, and I can't analyze myself to tell you why or how that came about. In North Vancouver at the time, I was fairly well known. I was a radio announcer then too, although I wasn't doing a talk show as I am now. But I was known for as a radio announcer. I worked for the local station in North Vancouver. I was doing a program that involved the expression of opinion. A crazy program at the time called Favorite Dish, which involved recipes of all stupid things. But that's what I was doing. I was singing and acting in the North Vancouver Light Opera Association and eventually became president of that. We were doing Gilbert and Sullivan operettas, which is a rather pet hobby of mine. So when I found a problem in regard to my own house, I was not the type to sit back and just take it. I was a guy who got involved. And the problem was that my young children, I had two at the time, were getting sick. They were vomiting up their meals after playing in the backyard. And I finally called in the health inspector, and he told me that the sewage effluent that was seeping through the ground in my particular part of North Vancouver was so bad that the children were becoming contaminated. So I went storming up to the district hall to find out why on earth they would ever sell a piece of property that was in that condition in the first place. And the treatment I received there didn't impress me, and I became annoyed, and so I looked, where do I fight now? And somebody said, why don't you go to the local ratepayers meeting? I forget who that was, and I did, and I stood up and voiced my opinion. And as often happens in those ratepayers meetings, they said, here's a guy who's prepared to stand up, won't you go on our executive? I think I became vice president the first night I attended. And the mayor, who at that time was Myrtle Fraser, since deceased, called me up about a month later and said, look, we're having a sewer program, and I know you're upset. We need somebody to help us convince the public to vote yes. This was a very expensive program. And I said, yeah, I'll sit on the committee. And I campaigned pretty hard that year. And that bylaw went to the people and was successful. And I suspect largely because of my activity in that, I was asked to run for council.
Okay. There is one other thing we'd like to ask you, and it's got to do with the provincial pollution problem. The program is being carried on. We've heard pro and con to it, but we would like to get your opinion, actually.
You mean of the present pollution laws in British Columbia or the way pollution is being handled in British Columbia?
The way pollution is being handled in British Columbia under the present government,
I think there's a philosophical difference here between the various political parties, and perhaps you can separate them into two approaches. That approach represented by the present government and the approach represented by the opposition. Now, you may find minor variations between the two opposition parties, but basically they're saying the same thing. The provincial government, as I understand their philosophy, is to, where pollution emerges, where something threatens to be a pollutant, they will refer this to the Pollution Control Board, which is a rather emasculated board. It hasn't got a heck of a lot of power, but it does sit and look at the situation and then determine whether or not they will grant what really amounts to a pollution permit, whether or not they'll grant an industry, for example, the right to pollute. The board does not have any power to instigate investigation on its own. That is the type of power I'd like to see. And consequently, unless something is of extreme if something is extremely obvious as being a pollutant factor, it never gets before the board. For example, if a mining company wants to dump its tailings in Rupert Inlet, as Utah Mining currently does, they must go to the Pollution Control Board to get a permit to do so. And that application is before the board now. But there's no way that I see that the Pollution Control Board would ever come into my riding and take a look on its own initiative as to whether or not the Neptune Terminal is polluting the atmosphere with their bulk loading facility. Yeah, that's the philosophy as I see a solution now. My approach to this and the approach of the opposition generally is that pollution has become so important that we as government should do nothing until it has been vetted by a department whose sole responsibility is pollution. And that everything we do as people now, everything government does, has a pollution side or a potential pollution factor. Therefore, everything should go through a pollution department. And this is not a new concept. We've got a health department, and we can't do anything until it's vetted by a health department. And we've given wide and broad powers to the public health officer in any municipality. In effect, the public health officer on his own can close a school, he can close a business, he can do virtually anything. He then must, of course, be prepared to back up the action he takes. But he doesn't even have to hold a hearing. He just goes in and says it's closed right now, and that's it. Now, I'm suggesting the same type of approach to a pollution department, and where the pollution department on its own can look at the whole environment and initiate investigation and police, and that before any development is even contemplated, it would be vetted by the pollution department. Now, is this pie-in-the-sky type of thinking? I don't believe it is, and if we believe the speech from the throne yesterday in the federal jurisdiction, it looks like this is the approach the federal government is going to take, and if it is, I support it. I think this is a basic difference of philosophy. So obviously, I don't agree with the government. I'd like to see a ministry who's involved in police, and I'd like to see that a senior ministry. And you have to make it somewhat independent, but I think in police is very important.
One question now, I think I'd like to get back to you as an NLA. When the Senator is in session of 28 weeks or whatever it is, how do you allocate your time? Do you feel that you should spend a lot of time in the assembly listening, or do you feel that it is a waste of time sometimes, and what you do in your office? And also, the second part of the question would be the other 10 months. How do you allocate the time between, you know, your work with the WS or your seats if you're riding and you do kind of things?
Yeah, okay. Let's deal first with the role of my role as an MLA while the House is in session. First of all, I feel my role as a broadcaster is inseparable from my role as an MLA. I didn't really intend it to be that way, but it turned out that way. So I take my program with me to Victoria, and I still do it while I'm in Victoria. So obviously, for an hour and a half every day, I reduce it by an hour. For an hour and a half every day, I'm broadcasting from Victoria from a studio set up in my own apartment. How much time do I devote to MLA work? Virtually all the time I'm awake, because my wife and family are here in Vancouver, so most of the MLAs from outside Victoria work full-time on their duties there. So the House sits at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. In the morning, an MLA is involved in some committee work. But the committees are completely useless to operations in Victoria, so frankly, they don't concern me too much. And I'm being very blunt with you here. Understand that under the rules of the British Columbia House, a committee may not sit while the House is sitting. Contrary to what goes on in Ottawa or what goes on in London. And the absence of members from the House in the House of Commons is very often explained by the fact that they're attending very important committee work. And in British Columbia, no, there's no committees that are sitting on the House of Commons. Now, Dick, your question is, it's useless to sit in the House. I don't think it's useless to sit in the House. But I don't think as an MLA I'm required to sit in the House and listen to ill-prepared speeches, a bunch of political collaborators, some guys who in my opinion, have no concept of what they're supposed to be doing over there. So I wasn't elected to waste my time, so there's no way I'm going to sit in there and listen to this, that I could only describe as crap. Now some of it, there's a great deal of it, good, and I'll listen to the ministry, to do government policy, and I'll listen to some of the MLAs I respect, and I respect a great deal of them, remembering them. But, for example, there's no way you're going to get me wasting my time listening to the library anymore. I walk out. I get better things to do. And so if that makes me a bad MLA, top beans don't re-elect me, but I'm not one of them to waste my time. I don't. At 11 o'clock at night, I'm tired. I'm just as liable to get up and go home. If the House is going to sit all night, fine, let them go ahead. I think it's ridiculous. I'm not about to take part in it. Maybe someday by me going home every night, I'll raise the stage and they'll widen up and you're in the House and everybody else is tired. I've never known anything to be accomplished after 11 o'clock at night by anybody of any, and I've been in public office at various levels for 8 years, and the city council at 11 o'clock, everybody's worked, and you don't think straight, so you might as well pack it up and have a cup of coffee in your bed. So that's what I do. So therefore, I'm not the best attendant in the house. I'm there when I think I should be there. Now, outside the house, so when the house is not sitting, I have sat down frequently and tried to determine how much time do I spend as an MLA. And that's difficult because of my radio job. Another MLA might be able to answer better. Because I can't separate the calls I get from whether they come to me as a broadcaster or come to me as an MLA. I have set myself some rules I've had to. I've got a young family and they're more important to me than my political life. The rules I set for myself, from a political point of view, I will speak, accept speaking engagements only when they involve my own writing. I will always attend a meeting of my own writing association or any organization in my writing that wants me to speak to them, be it political or not, or Lions, or Kiwanis, or anything. Yes, I will accept. Outside my writing, if people ask me to speak as a politician, I will do so, frankly, only if I feel like it. It's my obligation to my own writing. As a broadcaster, I will accept some engagement speaking, and I'm often asked to speak about my program, about doing a program like this. But again, at my own convenience, there's no obligation for me to do it. I will not accept any engagements on Sunday, political or otherwise. If Sunday's one day, I won't answer the phone, I won't go anywhere, open meetings, won't speak, I won't do anything. That's the day I'll spend with my kids, and it's a real life activity. You can spend all your time as an MLA. Most of your time is involved in individuals, assisting individual people, and in that regard, I'll spend as much time as necessary, and I'll never turn somebody down in that. And that's the most important role an MLA does outside the house area. He's the ombudsman for his area, and he can be a very effective one, and that work I enjoy doing more than any of the other work in MLA. If I could stay away from Victoria, I'd be quite happy. But helping the guy who just can't get through the bureaucracy that is working stuff and facing some things can be quite rewarding.
Before you became an MLA, did you have certain ideas about what you should do? And then when you finally did become an MLA, have they changed at all, the ideas of what you should do?
I would say they're changing, and I haven't reached a conclusion. When I first became an MLA, like anyone else, it was like a privilege. You wake up in the morning and say, "Oh, it's smoke, I'm an MLA, what am I doing here?" My first time I stood up in the house in Victoria, I was just dumbfounded with my mouth went dry, and I looked around, how on earth did I get here? This is the feeling I had. And I was overwhelmed with the system. But that's 4 years ago, and I soon found out that the system is antiquated, it's old, it's inefficient, it's frustrating, and it's going to outlive its usefulness unless we change it. I found out that the political system we have right now, it's not just my party. I talked to all, I'm friends with all the MLAs, and we talked very frankly in Victoria, which is a very close friend. We all have the same problem. In between elections, the Canadian people, at least in British Columbia, seem to be taking a position that at election time I want to be involved, but in between elections, don't bug me unless I've got a problem, and then I'll bug you. So that to me is not politics, but I happen to say I'm still deciding, because I don't know how to counter that. I haven't figured that out yet. I allegedly come from the stronghold of liberalism on the North Shore. I've got 62, 65 members, maybe, at an annual meeting, we'll get 14 people. This is a stronghold of liberalism. That's not revealing party secrets, because the other party is in the same boat. And I've been writing recently and saying some pretty strong things, and they are that if we don't change our system and make it more viable and more answerable to the people, it will be changed for us. And I'm not satisfied or convinced that the change is going to be for the best. So what's my role in this? I'm still trying to decide whether I am capable of doing something about that. And if I decide that in my own mind, then I'll try and figure out how I go about doing it. I've almost reached the conclusion. I've considered quitting the party. I've considered sitting as an independent. I've considered switching parties. I've reached no conclusion because I find time to find a situation.
Excuse me, but if you had it all pulled in, would you do it? Right at the beginning? Would you stay in the list or would you continue living down?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer. I think every person has this back and thinks, knows of something he thinks would be better. If I had my choice, I think probably I'd be a professor in political science at university or something like that. But I know something about the politics of university professors, too, and if I was one, I'd probably be very unhappy. But no, I think I'd do it all good. I certainly don't regret running for public office. If I hadn't run for public office, I would never have got a glimpse into the back room, the smoke-filled room of politics. It's a disillusionment of the
city.
The politics that the public sees is a reflection of the public. But at the same time, there is a bathroom there that not only is smoke-filled, it's very secretive. It's in all political parties. It's the bad side of politics. This is where the pork barrel is. This is where people are who want favors. They're supposed to do this research position. This is where the wheeling and dealing is done. So-and-so wants to be appointed to the Supreme Court of Canada. So-and-so else would like to get a government contract for this. I find this nauseating and endeavor to avoid it. But sometimes you've got to go in there swimming in order to try and accomplish what you want. The politics that become involved in some situations, I find myself having to be very nice and cordial to guys I have no respect for in order to convince them to stick for the position I'm taking.
Mr. Bennett, please.
If I'm never involved in this bathroom, I'm sure he wouldn't allow me in there. I'm talking about the bathroom of my own party. I'm involved in abortion reform. I'm trying to get my legislation changed in order to get support. I'm having to elicit the cooperation of guys who ask people in the bathroom, I detest.
Now, that will make you feel like thinking funny.
I went through that phase. And I found out that the other parties are just as bad. This is a maturing process, I think. I now know, okay, that's what politics is. Politics is not just waving the flag and giving the speeches and going out shaking hands and doing the nice job. Politics also involves the very crude facts of life. I've learned that. Now, how do I deal with it? Do I want to be a part of it? The only thing I am sure is I'm not going to fall for suddenly by saying, fine, I don't want to decide that I'm going to kill. It's whether or not I'm the guy that rolled up my sleeves and win their fighting. For example, I don't like the way we finance our political system. The bad men. But if you wipe out the bad men tomorrow, you haven't got any money to pay the election. How do you solve it? It's very easy to say, well, you wipe out the bad men and you just stop. I think you're right, but so far I haven't convinced anybody to do that. I just feel maybe if we did that, we'd fall flat in our favor. But I enjoy challenges just as a challenge. I'm having a ball experience in it. It's been an education.
When you were asked to run the Liberal Party, when you were deciding to run, in your consideration, the Liberal Party of Texas, I think they're trying to get into another political party, Beta Conservative, or NDP. What reasons why would you accept that it would be liberal?
Well, the first thing I had to do was try and decide in my own mind exactly what my political philosophy was. And I quickly came to the decision that it was small L liberal. Well, that wasn't surprising. I think people who know me well would have said that long before. I firmly believe in the principle that you should be able to do exactly what you want with your own body, provided you don't interfere with my right to do the same. That's a very simple explanation of what it's called. I'll look at it. Having said that, I then had to examine the parties to find out which one was liberal. Now, that may sound funny, but I did that seriously. There is a party known as the Capital Dollar, Nigel Liberal Party, which is not necessarily liberal. It's from my definition of liberalism. I was satisfied after examining the other parties that the party that represented most closely my philosophy was the Liberal Party. I re-examined that position considerably. When I get mad at the Liberal Party, naturally you're the first inclination is to say, well, maybe another time you said it. But I've never found that fair, and I can honestly say that despite the fact there are some things in other parties I'm sure that can take care of, that their philosophy is not right.
Let's take this opportunity, Mr. Clark, to thank you for trying to allow this to ask a question.